Genealogy by Tim, Season 4, Episode 9, recorded October 5th, 2024. I'm publishing a little late this month. For the first time in the run of this podcast, I simply forgot to record an episode. So now it is October, and I am finally recording the September episode. Work has been extremely demanding this past month. I spent a lot of evenings at the school. I work as a school teacher, Roxborough High School in Philadelphia. And I've been there from 7:30 in the morning to 6 o'clock in the evening, many evenings. And kind of putting genealogy aside as I rest and recuperate in the evenings. And lately, I've had a couple small side job offers, and the onboarding processes of these also consumed a lot of time. So there's a lot going on in my personal and professional life this month, and hey, guess what? The Genealogy by Tim just kind of fell by the wayside for a few weeks there. But I did want to put something out, say, hey, I'm still here, still doing things. No super interesting advancements this month, but I'll let you know what I've been up to on Genealogy by Tim. Most of my genealogy activity this month has been put toward entering into my genealogy software. The photographs of gravestones that I took this summer in Lancaster and in the Boston metro area. In early August, I went out to Lancaster, and the focus of research there was to study the descendants of Earl and Esther Hable. You may recall I devoted an episode to the Hables. They are an inspirational family for me, a husband and wife who stuck together despite tremendous challenges and hardship. Earl Hable is the son of Carrie Klein and John P. Hable. Carrie Klein is a sister of my grandmother's grandmother, Cora Klein. While in Lancaster, I was able to photograph the gravestones of Earl and Esther Hable's son, Earl H. Hable, and their daughter, Helen C. Hable Hollinger. They are both buried in the Purple Heart section of the Riverview Memorial Park in Lancaster City. Earl H. Hable was a casualty of World War II, who was killed in a mine explosion in the Battle of the Bulge in Belgium on January 3, 1945. His body was returned to the States in 1947, and he was buried at Riverview Burial Park on the 10th of November, 1947. Earl's sister, Helen, and brother-in-law, James W. Hollinger, are buried very nearby, same military section of the cemetery. James Hollinger was born March 21, 1914, and died August 7, 1982. He was a sergeant in the U.S. Army during World War II. His wife, Helen, was born January 13, 1916, and died March 3, 2007. The Hollingers had a son, Robert Charles Zam. And here's an interesting case, because I don't know where the name Zam comes from, Z-A-H-M. At first I thought he took his wife's name when they married. His wife's name is Doris J. Zam. She may still be alive, even though her name is inscribed on the tombstone monument. But I thought that her name was Doris Zam, and that he was born Robert Charles Hollinger, and that he took her name. But looking at newspapers.com, I found a marriage announcement identifying him as Robert Charles Zam, and her as Doris J. Alexander. So, that's an interesting case, and he was born in Lancaster on May 18, 1933, and died May 14, 2012. His obituary identifies four sons who are probably still living and could probably straighten out this mystery for me where the name Zam comes from. As I took the photographs, I thought he took his wife's name, but turns out not to be the case. So birth, death, burial, and military information on these descendants of Earl and Esther Hable were entered into the genealogy software by me over the past month. Another thing I managed to do while out in Lancaster earlier this August was visit the 6th Ward Park, which was established in 1927 and dedicated to some 14 or so soldiers from the 6th Ward in Lancaster City who died or were killed in action in World War I. Among them, David Klein Donnelly, who was the son of Catherine Klein and Edward Donnelly, Catherine Klein being another sister of Cora Klein, my grandmother's grandmother. David Klein Donnelly was born January 31st, 1890, and died in Prothoy, France, on September 16th, 1918, of illness, influenza, or pneumonia, depending on which source you read. I was able to visit the 6th Ward Park, and when the park opened, the soldiers were honored with bronze plaques that were placed on trees in the park, and a Lancaster Online article from 2022 describes how those bronze plaques were all lost over time and that a new gravestone-like monument was installed in the park to revive the memory of those soldiers who lost their lives in World War I, those soldiers from the 6th Ward of Lancaster. So I did a bit of research on David and uploaded the photographs of that monument to his profile in my family history software. And then you'll also recall, later in the month of August, I took an Amtrak train, put my bike on it, rode it out to Boston, and cycled around the nearby areas of Cambridge, Medford, Malden, and Bedford in search of the gravestones of Smith relatives. And Smith is my paternal grandmother's mother's maiden name. Her father was William Smith, who was born in Ireland. William Smith ended up in Philadelphia. The rest of his family ended up in the Boston area. So I rode out to Boston to find as many gravestones as I could on what little information I had, and I entered those photographs into my genealogy software, along with several photographs of people's faces that I was able to find on Find-A-Grave. Find-A-Grave user Jim Cav, evidently a descendant of Winifred and Maurice Kavanaugh. This user supplied several photographs of his ancestors, and I kind of scooped them up and included them in my family tree. Now, I won't republish photographs that others have posted without consulting them first, but I have them on my local machine. So, the parents of William Smith, James Smith and Maria Tierney, are buried at Holy Cross Cemetery in Malden, and I was able to take a picture of their burial plot, which is unmarked. I was able to add those to the family tree, as well as the unmarked graves of their son Bernard and their daughter Susan Agnes. Bernard Smith married Ellen Agnes Berry. Bernard was born in 1868, died in 1922. Ellen was born in 1870, died in 1921. I was able to photograph their unmarked grave, which also contains the grave of their son Edward, who died in 1915 in a freak elevator accident, the story of which was retold in an early episode of Genealogy by Tim. I was able to add to my local family tree the unmarked grave of James Andrew Smith, a son of Bernard and Ellen who died in infancy in 1892, and also the grave of Mary Ellen Smith and her husband, Joseph Richard Dobratz. Joseph Richard Dobratz and Mary Ellen Smith. Joseph Richard Dobratz was born in 1895 and died in 1872. Mary Ellen Smith was born in 1896 and died in 1987. They have a daughter, Mary Agnes Dobratz, who was also buried at the same location. She was born in 1922 and died in 2012. The Dobratz family is buried at Evergreen Cemetery in Brighton. Moving over to Susan Agnes Smith, she married a Thomas J. Barry. And, you know, you gotta wonder whether Thomas Barry was related to Ellen Agnes Barry, husband of Bernard Smith. I wonder if it was a situation of siblings marrying siblings. That would be interesting to discover. But anyway, Thomas J. Barry and Susan Agnes Smith had several children, many of whose graves I was able to photograph, including Mary Magdalene Barry and Edward Bartlett Hinckley. The Hinckley family is buried in Shawsheen Cemetery in Bedford, which is about an hour away by bike from the others in Malden. Thomas Barry is buried with his daughter, Joanna Barry, and son-in-law, John Edward Wyatt, at the Oak Grove Cemetery in Medford. I was able to capture that monument and add a photograph of it to my family tree. And also, Susan Agnes Smith and Thomas Barry had a daughter, Veronica Barry, who married James Edward McGuire. They were buried at Holy Cross Cemetery. They died very young. Veronica was born in 1896 and died in 1923. James Edward McGuire was born in 1893 and died in 1919. They had a daughter, Winifred Joseph McGuire, who seems to have been adopted by the Hinckley family. And she married Maurice Francis Cavanaugh. She died in 2004. He died in 1998. And they were buried at Mount Auburn Cemetery, which is a beautiful garden cemetery in Watertown, Massachusetts, just by Cambridge. So much of my genealogy hour this month was spent adding those gravestones and some life stories where they could be discovered to my genealogy software. And I just finished up the last of these last night, so my job tonight is to export all of that data and upload it to my website. So we should have the fall update to the Genealogy by Tim family tree by the end of the weekend. Now I'm going to leave you this month with a thought experiment that I had last night, and it has to do with backups and sharing of information. And I think IT professionals recommend at least 3 copies of your data, and at least one of those copies being off-site. Suppose, for example, my apartment burns down. Well, I have my family tree on 3 computers, one of those computers being the server that runs my website. But if my apartment burns down, all 3 of those copies disappear. And that's it. All of my research over the past 16 or so years is gone. Similar situation if I, heaven forbid, have some kind of accident, fall into a coma. All 3 of these computers are password protected, so someone who's sort of going through my things, they're not going to be able to get into these computers, and they may not know how to operate a server in any case. So the server will be up and running, you know, at least until my girlfriend who lives in my apartment either moves out or changes internet providers. Once that happens, the data on the server would be pretty much inaccessible to anyone who isn't amazingly familiar with computers or how to open them up and get the hard drives out and put them in enclosures or whatever. I mean, you can get the information, but the average computer user may not be able to do that. So I'm asking these what-if questions. You know, what if all 3 copies of my family tree become inaccessible, either because they're all destroyed or because I'm destroyed and no one is left to be able to log into these machines? I came up with this idea of kind of a challenge. Basically, what if I wanted to just hand out computers with my family tree fully loaded and ready to view? Okay, it's not quite the same as handing someone a hard drive, like a flash drive or an external hard drive with all my research on it, because, you know, the way I have it organized, it's organized by source. So the person looking through all that stuff, well, they'll have all the files, but part of the real value of those files is the way that they are attached and referenced in the genealogy software. So handing out flash drives is better than nothing, but not quite the same as handing someone a computer with a fully functional copy of my family tree that they can just open and start clicking through and navigating. I don't have all of my files up on any online service. Not Ancestry, not FamilySearch. I do work on FamilySearch occasionally and put data in there as I know it, but I don't always upload the files that I have. So the only place to really get all of the work I've done is on an actual computer with these files. So the question I ask myself is, how cheaply can I buy computers, load them up with my family history, and hand them out? And I did, you know, a little research online, and you can go 2 routes here. You can go the used computer route, or you can go the new computer route. And for new computers, the cheapest I could find that would probably do what I need to do. Well, let's back up here. What exactly would this computer need to do? Not much. It would have to boot into an operating system that can run my family tree, load and display PDFs, images, and occasionally a video. It doesn't even need to get online. It certainly doesn't need to run high quality YouTube videos. It really doesn't need to do much. So, looking online, the cheapest computer I found new, that you can get new, looks to be the $70 Raspberry Pi 400. It is your complete personal computer built into a compact keyboard. In a way, it's almost like a throwback to the old Commodores. But Raspberry Pi single board computer, they've first come out in 2012 at the price of $35. And although they've improved over the year, they've still kind of kept the $35, $40, $50 price point. This model of the Raspberry Pi 400, is a single board computer built into a keyboard. So one option is fresh new Raspberry Pi 400s, load them up with Genealogy. I may, in addition to the machine itself, I may have to purchase a SD card to store the data in the device. Okay, that may be an additional $20, $30, $40. So we're approaching triple digits here. This computer does not come with a monitor, though. So if I'm giving this to somebody, I'd have to say, hey, get a HDMI cable, plug this into a monitor, boot it up. It's all ready to show you all family history. So that's at $70 plus probably the cost of an SD card. Now, I have about 60 gigabytes of data. Okay, it could probably be far less than that if I was a little more careful with my image sizes and my PDF sizes. But the way it is now, it's 60 gigabytes. And not all of it is in use. So I have a huge folder of documents that I haven't filed away yet. All right, so that 60 gigabytes could probably be trimmed. So that's one option, Raspberry Pi 400. Okay, $70. I could buy two or three of these and just hand them out. Okay, here, have this. Put your own password on it, or none, whatever you think is best. So that's one option. That's going the new computer route. The old computer route, the used computer route, is Chromebooks. Used Chromebooks seem to be pretty cheap on eBay, and last night I scored for a total of $30.44, I was able to buy a used Asus Chromebook C213SA / YS02 Chromebook. Initial release date on this machine is 2017. End of life was May 2024, and that may be why the price is low on these. This machine has 4 gigabytes of RAM, 64 gigabyte solid state hard drive, apparently a 12-hour battery. I'm looking at ChromebookDB.com. Intel Celeron N3350 Apollo Lake quad-core processor at 1.1 GHz. An Intel HD 512-core graphics processing unit, 200 MHz. These numbers probably mean about as little to you as they do to me, but someone out there listening might get a feel for what that is. And hey, $30. Now, on eBay, the screen of this thing looks functional. It's one thing I look for when I'm buying used computers is, can a person boot it, at least the BIOS? And this screen looks on, so it looks like a usable machine. $30 used Chromebook. Okay, I believe this model was aimed at students, and I work at a school, so I'm familiar with the types of computers that are given to students. But yeah, this does not need to do a ton of stuff. Okay, with the 64 gigabyte solid state hard drive, it should barely fit all of my data without the need for a SD card or other supplement to the memory. But, you know, if it turns out, you know, with operating system plus data, it may run over 64 gigs, so I might have to add an SD card. But I ordered this on eBay. I should be getting it within a week or so, and I'm going to see if I can fill this up with Genealogy and just hand it to somebody. Because here's a situation that I've encountered. I have relatives who have their own computers, but I usually don't get to sit down on their computer and, you know, say, here, I'm gonna dump 60 gigabytes worth of stuff on your computer and I'm gonna mess with it for a couple hours, several hours, and try to get a running copy of my Genealogy software on your computer. I usually don't have that availability. And, you know, I was with my brother a couple years ago, And my niece, his daughter, was interested in family history. And she had a computer. And I said, hey, why don't I just put this on your computer? And he, my brother, was kind of hesitant to say, like, okay, 60 whole gigabytes of data. Like, the computer may not handle that, or it may take a while. We only have the afternoon together. So I transferred to my niece's computer just the GEDCOM with thumbnail images. So my niece has the full family tree, but not the 60 gigabytes of original documents. So it's just situations like that where, you know, the availability isn't always there to, you know, commandeer someone else's computer for several hours and 60 gigabytes of their hard drive space to have another running copy of the family tree. So when I get this $30 Chromebook this week, I'm going to see if I can shoehorn my whole family tree on it and just hand it to somebody to say, here, this is your copy of my research. Okay, keep it safe, keep it well. This is a backup, fully functional. If you want to look at it every day, go for it. If not, keep it in a closet, and maybe I'll check in on you in a couple years and update it. That may be a little more well-received than just kind of borrowing someone's main machine and kind of doing all the stuff to it. But anyway, that's my next project, and I'll let you know how it turns out. And that wraps up another month of Genealogy by Tim. Hopefully, by the end of October, things will have settled down at the school. I won't be staying late so many evenings. My onboarding for my other side jobs will be complete, and I'll get to spend more time researching and bringing you the latest genealogy discoveries with the Graham and Anflick families. Until then, keep on digging. Your next family history adventure awaits. Mm-hmm.